Hey, my name is DJ Chuang. I'm the author of Multi-Asian Church, and I am having a conversation here with Dr. Roy Kim, who is a therapist here in the Fullerton, California area, Southern California, and he has a therapy practice called New Legacy Counseling.
Mm-hmm. New Legacy Counseling. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. And not a doctor, by the way. Not a doctor. Doctoral degree. Yeah.
Well, you're very experienced because you've also been a pastor in the past. And we're recording this unedited so that you can sense that, we don't have a lot of time to edit because we're just amateurs. But we have a very important message that's on my heart and also on Roy's. I was listening to a recent episode of a podcast called Centering that comes out of the Asian American Center at Fuller Seminary. And a couple of things really caught my attention. And I'll refer you to that episode in the show notes here. But Roy shared about how, as a therapist, he's recognized, and the statistics tell us that the addiction to pornography is a serious issue for men, and Asian American pastors are not an exception to that. But because of our shame culture and because of the position of pastors, it would be like career suicide to try to address that on a personal, much less communal basis. So Roy, I want to hear from you and help pastors to understand that if they're caught between a rock and a hard place and they're struggling with this, or if they counsel men and even women in their congregation that are struggling with this, how can they take some safe and helpful steps for themselves and for others?
Well, helpful steps, I can lay out a few. Safe, that's a different issue. I think each pastor is going to have a different threshold of what they feel is safe to them. Mm. And I spoke to Jessica Chen Feng on Centering regarding this issue about pastors feeling like if they were to ever share with their elder board or to their congregation about their porn addiction or their sexual addiction, that it would be career suicide. And in many ways, I agree that it might be, especially given some of the stances that churches have regarding porn addiction, which if you peel back the layers of the onion a bit, it's quite hypocritical, I think. You would think that if the stats are right, that roughly 65-ish, 70% of males in the church struggle with mm-hmm. porn addiction or sex addiction, and mm-hmm. 57% wow. of the pastors do, and wow. maybe 25-ish% of females do, then mm-hmm. what the congregation is saying is, hey, pastor, we can struggle with porn addiction, but you can't, mm. right? Mm-hmm. So, and the elders are saying, shame, shame, shame. Like, we can, but you can't, right? So, so we're really dealing with an interesting, hypocritical issue here, where the pastors, if they are in a culture where they cannot divulge that because they get fired, then I think most of them will just keep their mouths shut. But mm-hmm. what happens is a great impotency, and I guess I say that kind of tongue in cheek here. There is a great impotency in their ability to minister at the level of, I don't know. I think pastors can be good professional Christians, but I think, if we're really talking about the audience of one, like the Lord Jesus Christ being your boss, you know, the one who is guiding all of your steps. How well will he think of these decisions to just keep these things in private and to live that inauthentically and to continue to do sermon prep and take breaks watching porn and go up to the pulpit and speak these things and have people think that you are the greatest person alive? I mean, there's kind of a sham going on, I think, all over the place. And it's not me necessarily being like judgmental, because, you know, I'm part of that equation. You know, one of the things I share in my podcast is how my porn and sex addiction as a pastor was, it was one of the things that caused me the most shame. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe myself when I was, you know, back when I was pastoring, this was like, you know, late 90s and early 2000s. Back then, the commentaries of choice were like the NIGTC and the word commentary with that, mm-hmm. with that green and black, you know, covering. And, you know, I've been reading those things late at night and prepping for my sermons and take a break, maybe play some StarCraft. And then after playing StarCraft and I'd watch porn, then my eyes were glazed over and then turn that off and go back to sermon prep. And it's like, you know, something's wrong here, right? Like, I'm just, mm-hmm. not just morally, but it's just like, I'm just compartmentalizing things so strongly that I can not only fool the congregation into thinking that I'm like this great person, full of great moral choices, but I'm not giving the congregation an example of what it means to be gospel driven. And that is, that doesn't mean, you know, me never making bad mistakes. It means gospel driven means, how can I allow the blood of Christ to really be the thing that allows me to confess my sin to people, mm-hmm. to myself and to people, and to let the gospel wash over and to say, I need help. Mm-hmm. And as I get help, you know, will you help me get help? And I just feel like that's what's lacking in the churches. And that's why I love doing what I do, you know, as a sex addiction therapist. I love inviting pastors to come get treatment, to come into a group that's tailor-made for pastors with porn and sex addiction, to come and say, this might be your one place currently where you can be that authentic and let the gospel wash over you. Mm-hmm. And not only are we just kind of sitting around saying, oh, I relapsed, or, oh, I looked at porn, but we're saying, no, we're going to abide by these protocols because the research has shown that this is actually effective for long-term sobriety. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like this is the remedy. This is the, you know, the way to fight against the culture, mm-hmm. on very, you know, small battlefronts. But I think the mm-hmm. larger culture is going to take a lot of revolutionizing, because there are many, many, if not, I think the majority of churches will just go ahead and can you for saying, I have a porn addiction. You know, they're thinking about like what the congregation is going to say. And they say, well, the congregation might pressure them and say, well, we don't want someone like this in the pastorate.
Well, what you describe is such a lifeline. And before we go there, I think one thing I want to say is that your first step is not to divulge it to your church leadership or your church. Your first step is to get help for yourself.
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you've described that because you're a sex addiction therapist, you've been a pastor, you work with pastors. I would hope that people understand that in talking with a therapist, everything's confidential.
Yes.
And you have the sensitivity of that kind of work. And you're a Korean American, so that you can speak very sensitively and reassure people that, hey, it's okay to just have a phone call. You might even start with, hey, I have a pastor friend who's struggling with
right.
pornography. What would
asking
you
for a friend.
Advice? Sure. But just to start that conversation will be a huge first step towards a pastor getting himself help. And that compartmentalizing you talked about, we are holistic beings. And I think, especially for us as people of color, we as a culture, we compartmentalize less, and psychologically we're one person. And so when we're compartmentalizing, it's going to come out sideways. Mm-hmm. It's going to come out in relational harm. It's going to come out in the weight of shame can actually eat away at your body, because your body knows.
Definitely.
And shame is literally the silent killer. So it also means your ministry may seem fruitful, but it could be so much more fruitful. And it's so much more life and freedom for yourself that you don't have to live with that shame, even though you're currently there.
Right.
That there's a way out that is hopeful.
Right.
And then as you get help and get healthy yourself, then you can worry about the career thing later and how to navigate that. How does that sound? Can you elaborate?
I think that sounds great. And I do empathize with people who are fearful of losing their pastoral jobs. They have families to support. But I'm just, I'm going to go back to, so this is one of the things that I realized about my life. Mm-hmm. Ever since going into recovery. Mm-hmm. Recovery is probably the thing that has, other than maybe a few like revival meetings back in the day, but I think recovery has been one of the things that has opened my eyes to what it means to be released from shame by Jesus Christ. Mm. And I believe that hanging on to a pastoral job is not the way to salvation. It's not the way to life-giving life. I believe being liberated by Christ is the way to life-giving life. And so if hanging on to your job is the main goal, I don't know. Maybe this is a pretty hard take here, but maybe pastoring isn't the greatest thing for you, the greatest option for you. You gotta ask yourself, why are we pastoring? What is this gospel that we are? Who is this Christ that we are sharing with people? What kind of liberation are we offering to these people that we ourselves have or have not experienced? And if we continually speak in ways that are just trying to make ourselves look good, that's rough, And I think every pastor needs to ask themselves that hard question. Yeah. And you are right. What you said earlier, DJ, I don't think the first step is to tell your elder board, I'm a porn addict. I do think that it's better to get some recovery first under your belt, so that you are well on your way to recovery. And then you can have this important conversation with your, elder board saying, this has been my struggle for the past how many years, and I've been going through recovery now for the past, 9 months or so. and this is the difference that I'm experiencing now than I was back then. And, you know, I think that's a better place to have that conversation. But I still think that it's worth it to have that conversation, especially for the sake of the gospel.
Yes.
And when congregation members are coming up to you saying, "Hey, Pastor Bob, I've got this porn issue. What should I do?" Well, now you can tell them from experience what they should do, rather than saying, "Oh man, feel sorry for you, brother. I don't know. Maybe you can ask Google or something." You know.
Well, pray more and go to Bible study more.
Yeah, maybe you should pray Bible more. Answer. You know, the Lord will set you free, and just, you know, pray for it. So, because they, you know, the pastors who say that, they don't really know what to do. So, So I feel like I empathize with pastors, but I experientially know what it's like to be liberated from the shame, because wherever I go, whether it's in the privacy and the confidentiality of my groups, or whether I'm up speaking, I think I bumped into you at the Gospel Coalition at EV Free Fullerton.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And when I spoke there, you know, I spoke about sex addiction. I told them, "Hey, you know, I'm a former pastor, and the entire time that I was a pastor, I was a porn addict." Mm. I mean, you heard a hush over the room, and you know, I never really know what the outcome's going to be. And honestly, I don't care, because I just know that with Christ releasing me from my shame and Christ being with me in my recovery, and you know, my wife knowing my story, that I'm good. You know, what people think about me in their opinion is that's their prerogative. But I tell you, DJ, after my talk, there was a sizable line of people wanting to talk to me and wanted to thank me for saying what I said, because either they are going through the same thing, or they've got people that they want to help in their congregation. So I just feel like if a pastor is going to go ahead and get recovery for themselves, they are going to multiply blessings for themselves and for their church. I fully believe it.
Yeah.
And, but even if there's persecution involved, you got to face it, you know, like that's, people are going to do what they do, but that doesn't mean that you'll never pastor ever again. You might need to be in a season of healing first before you pastor again. But again, if we're just trying to cling on to our pastor jobs or reputation, what really has the gospel saved us from?
Well, thank you for saying that. And that's a whole nother conversation, understanding how the gospel actually changes us from the inside out. Because it's easy to overlay the Asian culture on top of Christianity and see it as moralism and performance and righteousness and duty.
Yeah.
And never really understand the freedom on the experiential level, and the freedom we have to come before Christ and in community with our brokenness. I think that's very hard to see in many Asian churches, if I could say it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But let's finish out this conversation with what does recovery look like for a pastor that's willing to get help?
Sure.
How long did it take for you, or how long does it take on average to get to a place where they can make some better decisions for themselves and their family?
Yeah. Recovery comes in stages. And so initially, you're looking at a 90-day sobriety period, 90 days straight of abstaining from the very activities that that violate your conscience. You know, the a lot of the scientific research shows what happens when you give your brain that 3-month rest period. It's a very moldable, pliable organ, the brain is. And so when it has been traumatizing itself repeatedly because of our actions that violate our conscience, the brain is dealt violent blows. and the executive functionings don't work as well as they used to. But that doesn't mean that it is permanently damaged. Giving it that 3-month break will give it a lot of rest. And then once you get past that 3-month mark, you're able to do some of the deeper work, such as maybe going into some childhood traumas that needed to be healed, doing a bit of identity work, such as maybe growing up with this need to be desired. And, you know, one of the cool Instagram posts recently for Covenant Eyes, which is a software, filtering software for porn, is said that, you know, porn addiction is, fantasizing, sexual fantasizing is basically a desire to be desired. And so where did that come from? You know, we can explore some of this desire to be desired and where that fell short. And finding other ways to deal with life head on instead of numbing out and fantasizing. How to be a truth teller instead of a liar and a deceiver, which we are so prone to do as porn and sex addicts. So we do a lot of deep work in the course of sex addiction recovery. And a lot of repair work as well in our relationships. So it could be maybe like a two-year therapy journey. And after that, I think the structures that a person builds into their life are the kinds of structures that they will need to maintain for the rest of their life, similar to someone who is a recovering alcoholic. They're going to need to live with different structures in place, or else they're likely to go back into their alcohol habits.
Okay. Well, thank you for walking us through that so that people have a little bit of light of what that journey would look like. Because I think some of the hesitation is the fear of the unknown. And so while they know what it's like to give pastoral counsel to people, they may not have experienced having to go to counseling for themselves for an addiction. I mean, that's just really raw and really painful, but really healing as you do that hard work.
Right. Yeah. There are 30 tasks involved in the sexual addiction recovery model, and all sex addiction therapists are trained in the 30 tasks. And it's, research shows that it is the most effective way to get long-term sobriety.
Excellent. So how can people reach out to you? I know you're here in Orange County, and you provide therapy on a number of topics, but certainly sex addiction, especially for pastors.
Right. Yeah, I do. Sex addiction is my primary focus, and I do run a pastor's group on Fridays currently. We meet in my office in Diamond Bar, and people can reach me by going to my website, which is newlegacycounseling.com. And I just want to say that, you know, I'm all for pastors getting as much resources as possible. Sometimes they may feel hesitant to reach out to a sex addiction therapist. They might want to maybe learn some more. So, you know, they can listen to my podcast that is devoted to sex addiction. It's called SA, which stands for sex addiction, SA Speakeasy. There are a number of other great podcasts as well. I think Pure Desire is another fantastic Christian podcast devoted to sex addiction. I think for those in the Northern California area, mm-hmm. Community Presbyterian Church has a counseling center in San Ramon. It's in the East Bay. Okay. And they have a sex addiction center there. It is okay. a fantastic resource. So, yeah, anyone who is needing to go get some recovery, because they are Christian, mm-hmm. they will really give you that perspective that you're needing. But yeah, I would love to speak with more pastors. I care about the church. I care about pastors feeling like they have had a true encounter with Christ in this area. And if anyone wants to speak to me, I would love to speak confidentially to them.
Great. Thank you so much, Roy. Thank you for your work. And I'm grateful for you as a brother and how you've experienced the freedom of Christ.
Oh, DJ, yeah, I'm grateful for the work that you're doing. And it's always an honor. I'd love to have this conversation anytime.
Okay. Thank you, Roy.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.